It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Marylanders now set for a general election, pitting a progressive Democrat against an incumbent Republican in a blue state. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Perhaps the hottest matchup in the state's November election is the race for governor. Democratic challenger Ben Jealous faces Republican Governor Larry Hogan, who has approval ratings of around 70% in a state with a 2-to-1 Democratic advantage. Jealous is a progressive Democrat who got the backing of former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, winning the primary by 10 points. But can he bring the party together in the fall? We'll take a look at that race and others this morning with Greg Bassett, editor and general manager of the Salisbury Independent. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, well, what do you make of, on the Democratic side, let's go to the governorship issue. Were you surprised Jealous won?
I thought Rusher and Baker was going to win, so that shows how much I know about these things. But Jealous certainly was sort of the popular favorite. He surged at the end, and a 10-point win is a big deal.
So what do you make of the shape of the Democratic Party then in terms of, I mean, Jealous clearly is on a progressive wing.
Yes.
I mean, is he going to be able to unite the party?
You could argue he's about as liberal as you can be. And it was certainly the moderates in the Democrats that carried Hogan to victory the first time because they perceived Anthony Brown as being too liberal, too far to the left. So I think Hogan's got the guy that he wanted to run against.
What do you think Jealous has to do in order to win?
That's a good question. he's not going to tone down. He's going to, I think, continue the aggressive rhetoric, and he's going to be true to his colors. I don't think he's going to back down on that. It's just a matter of whether he can make the case better than Hogan. Hogan's been getting ready to run forever. I mean, based on the press releases that I get, he has styled himself as a candidate all through this thing. And once the election was over, the primary was over, then it really came out. And there are emails every day about how Hogan stands on issues. He's going to run a very aggressive campaign, even though he seems to have a big lead right now.
As a matter of fact, I was driving through the Eastern Shore. There are a lot of big signs of, one was, I think, something about Hogan being the champion of the Chesapeake, for example. A lot of push. In terms of Hogan, one of the strategies, at least it seems, that's going to be utilized by Jealous, I suppose, other Democrats, is to try to tie him to Trump. How successful do you think that's going to be?
Hogan's really done a good dance on the Trump thing. Trump is not a friend of his by any means. The president's been pretty critical of Larry Hogan. But I think that would be the temptation to tie all the Republicans together, because a lot of Republicans are just having it a little too cute when it comes to Trump. They don't own up to him, but they don't disavow him either. Hogan does a little bit more to disavow him than most of the Republicans do, like Andy Harris or someone like that. But I guess Andy probably is a true Trumpite. But it's difficult, I think, for them to stand up against Trump. There's very little that Trump's going to do for Maryland because he didn't win Maryland, and he's been pretty aggressive about certain stuff with Obamacare, how we were going to get funded for Medicaid. He was not going to help Maryland with that early on. I don't know where that stands now. And Hogan's been properly critical, I think. He's telegraphed in a way that I think Democrats understand that he's sort of stuck with this guy and he's not like this guy.
So in looking at the Eastern Shore, one of the things that strikes me is that obviously that's where Hogan's big support comes from, particularly in terms of the rural areas.
Right.
So if you're somebody from the Eastern Shore, you look at Larry Hogan, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, does it make sense then for them to say, vote for Larry Hogan, who that's where the base is? You see the highways and so on. He's always around, as opposed to, say, somebody who's like maybe more affiliated with the cities and the Western Shore.
Well, when I go around, people still ask me who Ben Jealous is. They don't seem to really know who he is. So there wasn't a great name recognition thing going on, I guess, in the primary stage. I think Jealous has been down here once or twice, so he certainly hasn't had like a big media tour for us to get to know him. The governor's here all the time. I mean, we're almost tired of the governor coming down because he's here so much. But as always with these things, the key is going to be, if you can knock off one of either Prince George's, Montgomery, or Baltimore County, and a little bit with Carroll County, but that's always the key, is how well can Larry Hogan perform in Montgomery? Can he get enough votes in Prince George's, which he did last time? And that's what propelled him to victory.
Well, one of the things that, for instance, Anthony Brown, when he ran and lost, one of the critiques was that he didn't spend enough time on places like the Eastern Shore. Not that he was going to win, but they needed to kind of pad that vote bank just in case things fell short. I think Norm Conway, the former delegate, mentioned that to me.
Yeah, there are certainly pockets of Democratic voters on the shore. In Somerset County, there's a lot of Democratic voters because of the minority population. So Democrats can do, they don't win there, but they can do well enough there. Certainly Salisbury, has a very strong Democratic core, which has helped statewide candidates before. Cambridge, same thing because of the minority population. So they don't get the percentages, but they do get enough numbers, and that might add up across the entire state.
So how much do you think money's going to play in this? I mean, Jealous, I guess, raised something like $1 million in January, had something like $660,000 on hand. At the Biden fundraiser, Joe Biden was down there with a whole slew of Democrats, including Senator Ben Cardin, former Senator Barbara Mikulski, Mayor Catherine Hugh out of Baltimore, and so on, raised $150,000. Do you think he's been able to generate the kind of cash?
Never. What does Hogan have, like $10
million? Yeah, something like that, right.
Yeah. And one of my Hogan sort of friends said to me, right, like in an embarrassed way, he was like, we have more money than we can spend between now and November. We never expected to raise this much money. But the governor's been raising money all along.
Right, right. I mean, do you think there's a certain diminishing returns on that?
I mean, possibly, because I think you can oversaturate. Yeah, you hear about that all the time. But the first ad, the day after the primary, Hogan had that, Marylanders are coming back to Maryland and people aren't leaving the state and the economy's better. He already had a positive message out the very next day. So you know he's been making some expensive commercials.
One of the things is sort of looking at what the two have been saying. They're trading barbs, as it were. I mean, Jealous talks about Hogan being ineffective and remaining silent on Trump. Talks about the era of plutocrats. Hogan, on the other hand, says that Jealous is just simply too risky and too extreme. How do you think those themes are going to be playing out?
You know, I really don't know. I think it's probably an accurate description from both sides. It would be nice to see Hogan disavow Trump more, perhaps, but he's not going to. He's not going to alienate his base that way. There's just no need to, and I think he's done it enough. And Jealous seems like, not run-of-the-mill, but he seems like the kind of Democratic contender that we've seen before, either through Anthony Brown or Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. Mm. There is some new there, but not. I wouldn't put him in the stature of a Chris Van Hollen or even Ben Cardin in terms of expertise or that power of personality.
Now, Hogan, by the way, has also tried to link Jealous to Martin O'Malley. If you like Martin O'Malley, you're going to love
right.
Ben Jealous.
That's not fair, I don't think. Martin's his own guy, and so has Ben Jealous. But, that's sort of the rhetoric the Republicans are going to have on that kind of stuff.
One other,
which surprises me, because I'm still surprised at how unpopular Martin O'Malley is, even after all this time. I thought people would either forget or they would remember him more fondly. Because when you look at the presidential race, it seemed like he did pretty well in that, even though he went nowhere.
Right, but, exactly, yeah.
But I don't think he hurt himself in terms of the esteem. So it is kind of surprising that O'Malley is still vilified the way he is.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think that O'Malley's got that? Is it just taxes? He did go through this very tough economic period.
Yeah, he was there at the toughest time. And I guess, the thing with O'Malley that always bothered me was he was just such a know-it-all. I mean, like, in everyone else's opinion, just wasn't as good as his. So that, as a voter, that's what always bugged me.
Mm. Well, it certainly was a technocrat.
Very much.
I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. The other odd man out is Comptroller Peter Franchot.
Right.
Not endorsing.
Fascinated by Peter Franchot. I am just so I've watched this guy for years and years and years, and I'm not bragging by any means, but I feel like I've developed a friendship with him where I can talk to him about stuff that isn't really political so much, like human-type stuff. And when I was in college at the University of Maryland, Peter Franchot was basically like the mayor of Tacoma Park, and he was the first one to implement a recycling law, which was, at that time in the 80s, was just unbelievable. And they used to go through and they would search your trash. And if there was a beer can in there, it was a $5 penalty for not discarding this thing. And I was like, this is communism, run amok. I can't believe this. But now it's kind of standard. We all agree that recycling is important, right. So maybe he was right back then.
Right.
But yeah, he's a man without a home. He's really aligned himself with Hogan. He's too, he's made himself as a pro-business guy. He's made himself too conservative to be governor as a Democrat. He'll never be a Republican because he really is very much a liberal in his heart. It's fun to watch Peter.
So in terms of the outcome, Hogan wins?
At this point, Hogan wins. I can't think what Hogan's got to do to screw it up. I don't know. I guess his health is better. We don't talk about his health anymore.
No,
there was a lot of concerns about that for a while. But based on how everything stands today in, you know, in July, I don't see a path for Jealous to beat Hogan.
The other interesting race is State Senator Jim Mathias.
Yes, oh my gosh.
I guess yet again, right? He's being challenged by Delegate Mary Beth Carosa. What do you make of that race? I was looking at the numbers, and it's... He should Mathias should not have a really great shot of keeping his seat, and yet people have said that like two cycles before. What's going on here?
Jim has an interesting history in his elections where he wins by just a handful of votes, or he wins and then loses and then wins on a recount. You know, he's in a Republican-heavy district. He's a Democrat, and he gets ready. He's Martin O'Malley's best friend. You talk about Martin O'Malley. So he does hang out with the Democrats in Annapolis, and that is used against him, but it also makes him effective because he's there at the table. They like him. They'll listen to him so he can get things done among the power structure. Mary Beth, of course, is best friends with Larry Hogan. She worked with Larry Hogan in Robert Ehrlich's administration. They're dear friends. And if you listen to Mary Beth, she ties herself to Hogan in every possible way. She's going to try to ride along with his popularity. But it's legitimate. She really does know him and works with him and has some effectiveness, you know, through the governor. There's no doubt about that. I was fascinated in the primary situation. Jim was, in social media, really encouraging people to go out and vote in the primary, even though there wasn't a lot to vote for, especially among Democrats in Worcester County. Whereas there was a sheriff's race with Republicans and a state's attorney's race. It was real hot. Jim did not want to get, like, 7,000 votes and Mary Beth get 11,000 votes in the primary. That's pretty much what happened, though. But he was trying to drive turnout so it wouldn't look like she crushed him in a primary that didn't matter. And that was fascinating. They both raised a ton of money. I went through it. I forget what the number was. Was it $4 million each?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I went through that. He is ahead of her, but he's doing much better with PACs. And she really did not, they don't do fundraising during the session, so she didn't raise any money between January and April. So she's going to come out and start raising money. Again, that might be a saturation thing where they're both going to have so much money, can they possibly spend it all? Fascinating race. The numbers really geared toward her. He works so hard. I mean, he's so impressive in how hard he works. You talk about like Senator Pothole. He is really like that. And at the same time, she is too. And there's only a few issues that I think that they're really far apart on. Mostly, I think they would agree on 80% of the world. Going to be a really interesting race to see what happens, how they try to delineate from each other, how they try to make their mark here at the end.
What two issues do you see that there's some daylight?
She is she's going on about the sanctuary cities issue, about the immigrants, where he's more moderate about that than she is. What's the other one? They haven't really talked about guns yet. I guess the sanctuary cities, there's a tax issue. They're both she tries to paint the picture that Jim is suspicious on taxes, like he would like to vote for tax increases. He's not a tax cutter like she and the governor are. There was a bizarre thing with these houses and neighborhoods for drug rehabilitation. One of those things that was completely misreported and exaggerated against Jim. And I'm not sure that she's done anything to try to make it clearer to help him, certainly with that. That vagueness sort of lays out there. But I think it was sort of a cheap shot on Jim. And as we see with these Republicans, and that was another one of those things where a Republican committee sent out the mailer about that.
Right.
We saw this happen in the last election with Norm Conway and with Carl Anderton, where the Republican committee, sent out a really negative mailer on Norm Conway. Anderton actually disavowed it. Mary Beth did not disavow this one that I'm aware of. But you're going to see these PACs also causing trouble in these races.
Right. And then Carosa said that she hadn't had anything to do with them, I think, is the... Was I think the word from her campaign that they didn't have anything to do with this mailer
and then they
going
don't
out.
Right and they don't and right. you know and you want the effect but you don't want to own up you don't want to have to own it and that's the way politics is now it's a completely normal thing
by the way apparently the bill that she is talking about it basically establishes supervised drug consumption facilities and that's basically what it is and apparently Mathias was backing this piece of legislation looked like it wasn't going to go anywhere in committee for whatever reasons and decided then okay, maybe this is too hot.
But he even voted for it in a position where it wasn't going to win, and he didn't need to vote for it.
Right, that's true.
But his point of view is he sat there and listened to the medical experts, and they told him that this was important. that this is a path for people to overcome addiction and to get back into society. Mary Beth listened to the same testimony and told me that that's not what she heard at all, that, you know, it's not known how effective it would be. But the way it was painted as Jim Mathias wants heroin addicts to live next door to you.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's kind of a leap.
So, you know, I mean, obviously Larry Hogan's not going to be there forever, and we're not going to have a Republican governor forever, right? But I can't see any change in terms of the Democratic domination of the state legislature. So if you're sitting there making a bet, Carrozza might be look good right now, but maybe not down the road?
Well, no, I think...
Or do you think there's more?
Well, yeah, the one reason that she's doing this for the governor is that the governor just needs three more Republican Senate seats to have a veto number. So, you know, anything that he vetoes, it can be overridden by the Senate if he just says three more Republicans. So that's one reason they're going after Jim, that, you know, Mary Beth would be a reliable override person. I don't know that we're things stack up in the other races. I should look at that. But that's what's going on here. That would increase the power of the governor. It would help the governor in his second term. In terms of a succession plan, I really haven't heard of anything. And that's what Maryland, the beauty of Maryland is that people come from out of nowhere and all of a sudden get elected. You know, it's rare. You know, Martin O'Malley was always going to be the governor. But William Donald Schaefer was only the governor when he got mad and decided to run for governor. So you never know where these people are going to go. 10 years ago, I would have said that Peter Franchot would be governor someday, but not anymore.
By the way, just finally, in terms of Mary Beth's coverage, in terms of her district and how it overlaps with Mathias, it's only part of his district.
Yes. So basically, the Senate district is the three counties, but only about half of Wicomico. Western Wicomico goes to Addie Eckert in 37, District 37. Mary Beth's district right now is Ocean Pines, Ocean City, Northern Worcester County, and Eastern Wicomico County.
I want to turn, by the way, to Congressman Andy Harris. The Democrats have chosen Jesse Colvin. He raised a lot of money. I think the last report I had was that he had about $568,000, spent about $338,000, has about $240,000 on hand. Harris has got about $1.1 million, and he spent some money, and he still has got $1.3 million on hand. What do you make of Jesse Colvin's rise? He spent a lot, and he outspent his rivals, Democratic rivals.
I've not met him, but people who know him tell me that he's legitimate, he's real, he's intriguing, he's a smart guy, that they like him. So I hear that a lot. But right now, you know, you just heard the gerrymandering suit that was not heard by the Supreme Court. The First District of Maryland is basically one of those districts that's being talked about as part of that, the Maryland redistricting gerrymandering case. It's, you know, what they have done is gerrymandered a district so that only a Republican can win the First District. And that would allow Democrats to have seats in all the other, you know, nine seats in the state. Eight congressional districts in the state. It will always be held by a Republican unless there's some kind of a redistricting thing. And Andy's unbeatable. And I'm sorry to say that about Jesse, but it's just stacked against him.
Yeah. So what you mentioned, by the way, there, I guess there were a couple I don't have in front of me, a couple of other like hot sheriff's races, Wicomico. I mean, I guess it was Worcester County, I guess it was.
Yeah, Worcester County. Yeah. There was a close race down there. Mike McDermott, the former delegate who had run against Mathias, he lost a sheriff's race to Matt Casoli. And then there was a state's attorney's race down there that was also pretty hot. And Kristen... I thought we were going to talk about Wicomico. Kristen Heiser beat another guy named McDermott. So that was a really tight race. And again, there aren't any Democrats, I think, in the general. So the winner of those two races will take those offices. Same thing happened in Mary Bessel District 38C. The guy who was on the council in Ocean City. And what is his name, Don?
In Ocean City? I don't have a name.
You're supposed to know this stuff. Wayne Hartman's his name.
Okay.
He won a three-way primary, and he has no Democratic opposition in the general election, so he'll go right into the General Assembly.
Mm. So what are we to make of, looking ahead, by the way, we're going to now have, we're obviously going to have a competition for the Wicomico County Executive. I see lots of Bob Culver signs now. They're very big, actually.
Yes.
I see some other signs. What do you make of that race as we start to head in? And will, for instance, the Democrat drain off enough votes for Culver to get in if it's close?
Well, you know, it's not about me, but this has sort of been a litmus test in my career. If the editor doesn't know who you are, it's going to be hard to get elected. So this John William Hamilton guy who, and I don't mean to demean him, but he right. ran for county council at some point as a Republican against Gail Barkovich many years ago. He is the Democratic contender. He won that primary with no opposition. You've got Culver as a Republican at the top of the ticket. And then the interesting one is Jack Heath, who is the right. Salisbury City Council president. Jack is a man who leans Republican in his thoughts and his voting. If you talk to him, he's a pro-business guy. But he's always been unaffiliated, and he's running as an unaffiliated, as an independent. So, you know, can an unaffiliated person take on Culver, who will have the complete backing of the local Republicans? It's going to be really interesting to watch.
Is Democrats lining up again for their candidate, or is there? And I understand they're rumbling. Go ahead.
I've never heard a word of encouragement from anyone about John William Hamilton.
So it's just,
none of the Democrats have called and said, "Hey, this guy with their first district candidate with him." Mm-hmm. People have been calling me, "Hey, he's real. This guy's real. You need to listen to him." Oh, okay.
Right.
Not getting that at all. And I don't make it all about me, but it's one of those things. Usually, the editors kind of clued in on these things.
And now,
in theory,
right? They're always in theory. Well, but there seems to be some division when it comes to Culver in terms of what you would think would be a natural base, you know, John Cannon and so on and so forth. There seems to be some uneasiness. I mean, it's the only indication I get that maybe there might be some chance.
Right now, I don't know how much of that is party and how much of it is power. I think they kind of agree on all the issues. It's just a matter of how they're going to implement things and who's going to be in the driver's seat, basically.
Right.
The only kind of crazy off the Republican reservation thing that Bob did that I could see would be the Warwick tuition thing. The Republicans on the council just never seemed to embrace that at all. The cultural right people were kind of upset about the alcohol being sold at the Civic Center. But it has not been a problem. It was not, in terms of how it was forecast to be an issue, that hasn't happened. They've had good control over it. The joke I make is, you know, they don't sell it at family events, but, you know, Disney on Ice is one time when I need a beer. You know, if I'm going to sit through that thing, I need a beer. And they don't sell beer then. So maybe I'll vote for whoever would agree to sell beer during Disney on Ice. But anyway, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But so you hear stuff about that, but basically, you know, he's kept to where he should be. The council did cut taxes last year by a penny. He was opposed to that in terms of what it did to what they needed to spend money on, because they're still trying to recover from, you know, the economic collapse.
Right.
They're adding to the reserve. Bob was pretty normal through the budget process this year. There was not a big fight about the budget like there was last year. And of course, at the last minute, they came up with $500,000 for the school board, which in the beginning didn't seem possible. What Bob did was he put $750,000 in the budget of his own, and he said, "I think you should use this money for security in the schools." There's a lot of concern about things in the East County where there are not guards, or the officers are not there all the time. They share officers. He wanted to harden the schools in terms of security. The state has a program that they're working on where there's going to be state money, so there was a competition thing there. Council ended up just giving the money to the school board. They ended up cutting it to $500,000. But it was the first time that they had grown the maintenance of effort since 2006, I think. So that was really significant. And I think it was a really positive thing based on the people that I hang around with, the feedback that I get. But whether Bob's voters are going to be mad that they gave more money to the schools or not, you can never predict that, because there's a lot of negative stuff in some quadrants about the school system that they're wasteful and stuff. I don't see that as a reporter. My reporting doesn't match with the gossip that I hear, but still people believe that.
What about the role of volunteer firefighters?
Yeah, that's another one.
They're not only a constituency, they tend to be an organized one.
Yeah, that is just one of the biggest messes ever. And I could try to explain it, but I could not do a good job. So you have a situation where you had volunteers that were within the Salisbury City Fire Department who were not performing to Salisbury City Fire Department standards. They were asked to leave. They went out and started their own fire company, Station 13. And unfortunately for me, they named it Salisbury Independent Station 13. So all of my mail now goes out to the firehouse that they have on Snowy Hill Road. But anyway, and they're an independent group. They've been sanctioned by some groups. They've not been sanctioned by others. Salisbury will not let them assist on things. Culver tried to have things both ways, I think, with this. He wanted to please them. He did not. He was not opposed to going to the war a little bit or have a little bit of a fight with Mayor Jake Day over the Salisbury part of it. Culver has a problem in that he needs firefighting out at the airport. The county has taken that over as a contract thing. If he had a station out there, that would solve a lot of his problems in terms of, you know, maintaining safety at the airport. So it's a big picture all across. But then you've got how the county gives money to the different fire departments and how you count that. So under the fire services agreement, forever, the county would give a certain amount of money to Salisbury. Fire services agreement wiped that out in terms of people are going to be paid based on the actual number of calls. So there wouldn't be that stipend that was given out. Not all the firefighters understood that. And then you've got a situation, too, where firefighters out in the rural areas, Sharptown, Hebron, they all count on their money. But then you've had council members saying, wait a minute, has there been an audit out there? Where does the money go? We don't really know. And that's always a bad thing when you want to bring in people to audit volunteer fire companies, because things don't always perhaps go that well out there. It might not be as professional an environment as you might think. So there's a lot of irritation about that. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong out there at all, but there's concern that once they get out there that they're going to find stuff, but they want the council members to be calm about it. All in all, and there's also the huge overwhelming thing where the number of volunteers are going down across the country. More and more municipalities are having to hire firefighters and EMTs. And there's a constant grinding there. You see it in Ocean City. You saw it in Berlin just 2 years ago. It's actually going on in Ocean City again right now. And Salisbury, it rises up. Station 2, a bunch of years ago, got real mad. Right now, there's problems with Station 1. It's really hard to cover as a reporter. Yeah.
Stepping back, so we've been obviously fixated on lots of things that are going on in Washington. We saw at least what seems to be lots of energy when it comes to Democrats. We'll see whether or not that also translates for Republicans, especially over the Supreme Court justice nomination. How much of an influence do you think will such a blue wave, if it does come, is going to have in terms of, say, the state of Maryland? I mean, and could it have some impact at all on, say, something like the governor's race?
Yeah, it could. But again, if people are going to hold the governor accountable for Trump, Trump is still very unpopular in Maryland. The governor is very popular in Maryland. So I think that's the key. If he's able to continue to distance himself, or he's going to be accountable to Trump in some way, I don't see that happening because he's done such a good job so far in avoiding that. But I think Maryland just stays Maryland like it did the last election. Nothing really changes with that. And Andy Harris hasn't done anything to shoot himself in the foot. So, I think he wins easily, and I'm sorry for offering that opinion so far out in advance, but I just don't see a path for the other guy.
What about Matthias? You think he can wave it, run it away, ride the wave? I mean, it seems to eke it out in non...
The numbers all show Mary Beth in terms of registration. Again, it's going to be about turnout. And whether my daughter at breakfast the other day told me she's going to vote for Jim. And I'm like, you've grown up knowing Mary Beth since you were a little girl. She's like, there's just something about him. I like him. So that really ran through my body. I'm like, oh my gosh, how many people are out there going, there's just something about him. I like him. Has that been the key to his success all along? But that's going to be an incredible race. It really is to watch. And like I said, whether they come out of their shells at the end and start fighting, start duking it out, if they leave their comfort zones and try to push things, I've seen Jim test some messages around. It's going to be interesting.
We were speaking with Greg Bassett. He's the editor and general manager of the Salisbury Independent here in Salisbury. Appreciate you stopping by. We'll check in again to see how, particularly the Matthias thing. I think the Matthias thing is really interesting.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Sure thing. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.